Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. The Grow Show is brought to you by Marty Grinder's Grow Group, where we specialize in teaching landscaping companies how to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grinder Landscaping Company. New episodes of The Grow Show are released weekly on Wednesdays. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Marty Grinder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whatever the case may be. This is Marty Grinder from Grinder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group with another impactful episode of The Grow Show powered by Steel. This week, we have Barrett Chow, one of our awesome peer group facilitators and an expert in talent acquisition and company cultures from McFarland Stanford. He's going to be with us. Can't wait. It's going to be fun. Barrett is a bright guy. You're going to love him. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since Amtrak trains. Never been on one before, folks, that I can recall. But recently, after teaching a group of landscape pros in Boston, I was having a blast. And my wife and I, who hardly ever travels with me, she went with me and she tagged along. And when we were done in Boston, we took the train from Boston to Stamford, Connecticut, to visit my daughter and son-in-law and my precious 11-month-old granddaughter. And the train was clean, it was safe, it was easy. It was way better than going back to Logan National, taking a flight to LaGuardia, and then driving to my daughter's place. I liked it so much. I told my son-in-law, who was a tremendous college baseball player and loves baseball, that we need to go to a Red Sox game via the train next year. So we're going to do that. I haven't been to Fenway Park since I was 12 years old, folks. So if you have a chance, try a train, okay? I was pretty impressed with it, actually. Maybe some of you are already big fans of the train. Maybe some of you will try it next time. I'm going to guess, being in Denver, Colorado for a time period, Barrett, you might have been a fan of the train. So on The Grow Show powered by Steel, Barrett, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
Have you ever been on a train?
I have been on a train. We actually have a few trains down here. We have the infamous ski train that takes you from Denver to Winter Park. So you don't have to fight the I-70 traffic anymore, and you get to go skiing and come back, and you don't have to fight the weather, the traffic, or anything else that gets you done up there. So it's a great train to take.
It sounds like it. Well, I'm going to do it again. I was pretty impressed. So listen, you're a coach with McFarland Stanford. Tell us a little bit about your work experience and how you became a coach and how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, so for me, it's definitely been a journey. I started my career in HR in professional sports. I started working with the PGA Tour and the LPGA right out of college. That's actually where I learned the word agronomy. Wow. And then from there, I worked in private travel and even did a stint in software before I landed in the green industry with Lifescape Colorado. It's where I met you. It's where I met everybody at McFarland Stanford as well. Being a client of McFarland Stanford is actually what started to open my eyes to being a coach. I was able to transition into coaching after exploring another industry in civil engineering, but I made it a point to come back to the industry that I loved the most. And that's this green industry that we work in now. But, you know, I also coach quite a bit outside of my career as a coach. I've been a mentor for the Leeds School of Business for over a decade now, which is hard to say that I've been out of school for over a decade, but I've been coaching sophomores and juniors and seniors on how to find their place in their career. So I thought it was a pretty natural fit to help continue to coach business leaders in growing their companies.
I always love it when I hear somebody wasn't born and raised in our industry and they get in the green industry and they love it. Why do you like it so much?
The makeup of our industry is unlike any I've really seen, right? We really do give back to not only the industry, but to each other more so than any other industry out there. I mean, I think we can all agree that software can be pretty cutthroat, and we've seen other industries that there's just so much competition nationally, or so much pride in in their brand that they don't want to share or they don't have anybody to share with. Whereas I think this industry has done an amazing job of coming together from all different sorts of events and conferences that really bring us together, not to pit us against each other, but to actually share and grow with each other.
And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because the industry is maybe rooted in a lot of independently owned businesses. I mean, we've obviously seen great consolidation in the last 5 years, but I don't know it any other way, Barrett. This is all I've ever done. So I'm always flattered to hear that. And I like hearing that. And I think that is something. We have a few members of our team here at Grunder Landscaping that have said the same thing. Like, they can't believe how much sharing goes on in our industry. One was from the tech industry, Barrett, similar to what you said, it's cutthroat. I think people are afraid they're going to take the information they share with you and use it to hurt themselves, so that they don't want to share it. And that's just not what our industry is. I mean, you certainly see all the sharing that goes in our peer groups, in our partnership with McFarland Stanford, the ACE peer groups that I started 24 years ago. You know, you've seen the sharing that goes on there. That's the whole power of the group.
Yeah. And, you know, I even got to experience it as a client too, right? Yeah. My old owner, he was in a peer group, and what he would come back with, you know, it helped me do my job when I was right. team of one and I was new to the industry, and it actually gave me a couple of lifelines to help me do my job better.
So nice to hear. Well, I continue to hear awesome things about you from Vince, and just the work that you're doing in the peer groups. Human resources is your expertise. What are you seeing in HR in the green industry? What are landscape pros struggling with? Talk to us.
Well, I think what we're starting to see is that leaders are actually embracing HR a lot earlier in their business life cycle. You know, I think when you look at the traditional introduction of HR, or people operations, as I like to call it, we see it a lot earlier in businesses now, because before it was, hey, you had to be $15, $20 million in size, over 100 team members for it to make sense. But now we're bringing in HR professionals a lot earlier in that cycle, and they're getting to be a part of building the foundation for a company to grow on versus trying to be an add-on to a company. And I think what we're seeing is, with that shift, it comes with what a lot of landscape professionals struggle with, is this is an area of business that is not in, you can't have a lot of instinctual gut to go through it, right? You yeah. need some training, you need to right. have an education around it. But it's also, it's hard for a business owner to come in and relinquish some of that control. And finding the right partnership is, I think, where a lot of pros are struggling, is how do I find the right HR person for me and my right. culture and my group and my team?
And I think with a lot of the businesses that we work with at the Grow Group and at McFarland Stanford, you know, one of the things that frustrates me, Barrett, and Vince knows this, I don't know if you've seen me get frustrated over this, but I get really frustrated when I hear an owner of a landscaping company say, and I've heard this a few times, I'm going to get an HR person because I've got to have somebody in here to advocate for my team. And I hear that and I'm like, what are you talking about? So if you don't have an HR person there to advocate for your team, they're going to be taken advantage of by you? Like, I'm not following you. Probably just a poor choice of words. But to me, it was funny. I heard the president of SHRM, and I forget what SHRM stands for, the Society of Human Resource Management.
That's, you got it.
Okay. And this was a couple years ago, and I'm dating myself. It was before COVID, and they had a podcast with the executive director. And the first thing he said out of the gate was, HR is not a department, it's a philosophy. And I was like, oh, wow. And then he just went on to like say all the things that bothered me about it. Like, I just find poorly run HR departments, or poorly run human resources, or poorly run human capital, or what did you call it? People operations?
People operations, yeah.
Those are ones where it ends up having the employee pitted against the company. And you go to HR, or you go to your people operations person when you don't like the policy or you don't like something. And I just think that that brings so much tension to the room that's not needed. Am I making any sense? Can you expand upon that? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's actually, you know, at Lifescape, I rebranded HR as people operations.
Love it.
Because of this stigma that the, you know, in traditional business, in, you know, HR is doom and gloom, right? If HR is in the room, you did something wrong, or you have to go see HR, right?
Right.
So it comes with a stigma. And for me, as I rebranded it to people operations, it allowed other people to see me in a different light as well, right? There's a joke.
I see. That's a great point, that it allowed them to see you as in a different light as well. Keep going. That's good.
Yeah, because I think in a lot of my other jobs, like, there was a stigma that I was also known as the Grim Reaper, right? If Barrett was coming to town and he asked you to come with your computer charger, you knew what was happening, right?
I got you.
But it made a lot of people not even want to interact with me, because now you're on Barrett's radar, right?
Yep.
And for me, what we're seeing, though, is, hey, there's been a lot of changes. You know, COVID was a big part what turned HR on its head. And so we're now seeing that shift from, ooh, this is a cost center, to this is my strategic partner. This is strategic enablement for me to focus on areas in my business that I know nothing about, right? And owners themselves can sometimes be the biggest HR issue. However, that's where you need a partner to help navigate that, so that we can grow as a team and we can grow the right way. And we are setting, like I said earlier, a foundation to grow upon, and not building a house of cards that any good HR professional will come in and probably won't join your company if they see it as too much risk or too much cleanup work.
So along these lines, what are some small things, whether you own $1 million a year landscaping company or $50 million a year, what are some things that Barrett Chow can tell us to do today on the Grow Show powered by Steel that would improve whatever we want to call it? And I like people operations. We call it talent acquisition and development. That's what we call it here at Grunder. How can we improve that? Give us some small things anybody can do.
Well, I think the first part is, if you're going to have any sort of HR person, professional, people operations, right? No matter what you want to brand it, they need an opportunity to partner with your leaders. It sounds like a big ordeal, but it's really not. Like you mentioned earlier, I wasn't raised in this industry. There was no way I would have been able to accomplish what I got done without having access to my other leaders. But also, hey, you teach me the industry insights so that I can help you, versus, hey, as I help you grow, I'm also helping you avoid the cliff that you may be driving off of.
So when you say partner, that's not an adversarial term. That's a brotherhood term. That's a term of endearment, if you ask me. So when you say partner, like trying to understand the owner, trying to see where the weak points are and working with them. Can you expand more about what you mean by partnering with the owner?
Yeah, especially with owners, right? And I would also even go as far as managers of, you don't know how to build a training program. I don't know what they need trained on. So if we come together, you give me the content, I structure the program. Now we both know how it works, and we can level up from there.
And I love what you're saying, because that's not adversarial. Like I said, I don't like the word advocate. If you have a relative that goes in the hospital, I would strongly recommend you find someone to help advocate on behalf of your relative. When my mom went in the hospital, if I wouldn't have been there to advocate for her, Barrett, there's no telling what would have happened. She ended up passing away. God bless her. But I advocated for that. That was where I thought she wasn't being taken care of like she needed to, and I jumped in. I think when you go into this with your mindset, I love what you're talking about, that I'm going to partner with the owner. Look, I'm Barrett. I'm your HR professional, but I don't know the industry. We got to work together on this. I can put together a training program, but I don't know what to train on. So there has to be some dialogue going on. There has to be meeting, not just with the owner, but like to your point there, with the other managers. So we're going to figure out how we're going to make this place better together. Because at the end of the day, turnover costs a lot of money. And we want to be keeping people. So we got to try to make this place a great place to work. And we all know, Barrett, and if people listening today don't know this, I can tell you that one of the best ways to retain someone is to train them, to take an interest in them, to show them that there's a career path for them, right?
100%. I mean, I think we go back to, like, I'm a big believer in analogies and sayings, but there's one that we keep in the HR pocketbook right here is, what happens if we train somebody and they leave us?
Yes, right.
What happens if we don't and they stay?
Exactly. Love that.
Right.
Scene. Right.
And it's the same thing with, you know, like one of my favorite quotes from Steve Jobs is, we don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they tell us what to do.
That's right. Brilliant.
So we build upon it, and that's how we grow as a team. And that partnership comes in at a lot of different levels, right? And as you continue to grow, you can be in that tactical mindset of, let's build a checklist for onboarding, to let's build a strategic operational training program that gets you from an assistant foreman to an account manager, all the way to the strategic partnership of, how risk oriented are we, and how are we going to design our policies to support that and really be integrated into our culture day in and day out.
So if we just kind of pause here, if you're watching the Grow Show powered by Steel today, we have Barrett Chow from McFarland Stanford on with us, our strategic partners. Barrett facilitates many of our peer groups. He's an expert on HR. If you pause this and rewind this, the question was, what are some small things in HR in the area of human resources, people operations, talent development management, whatever you want to brand it as, you can do? And number one, you talked about partnering with the owner and the leadership team, the team leaders, the group leaders, whatever you want to characterize them, find out where the weaknesses are. You mentioned some onboarding. You mentioned a training program. There's a whole host of little things we just shared there that can help.
Yeah, I think that if you want to really set your HR department up for success, it comes with time, right? And it's your time to give them the material that they need to help you. To try to learn a new industry and do it is tough. But if you can meet them halfway and give them some of those things, give them what you have as a checklist. Let them build upon it. Let them enhance it, right? Don't shove them in a corner and feed them paperwork and homework. Because that doesn't make them effective what they are.
Well, and you just touched on something. So I've always felt there were two sides to talent management, HR, whatever we're going to call it. There's the compliance side, which are the legalities, the things you have to do. You're required by law to do it. And then there's the human side, which is, you know, I don't like my boss or whatever the situations are. What had developed here at Grunder Landscaping, Barrett, was it had developed into this terrible us versus them spot where if you didn't like what your manager told you, you ran to our HR person and it just, we didn't like where it was going. And we put an end to it, made some changes, got it back. And part of the changes, Barrett, was teaching our group leaders, which are responsible. We have five group leaders here. They're each responsible for between 5 and 12 crews. If they're construction or paver crews, 5 or 6 is about all they can handle. If they're mowing and maintenance, the mowing guys got 12 crews. The work is a little easier to understand. It's still a lot of guys to handle, but we're teaching them how to lead better. We're putting them through training. We're doing StrengthsFinder. We're learning how to work with them better. We're doing role playing. We're doing scenarios. How do you handle telling Billy that he's got body odor and it doesn't work here? How do you tell Billy that people don't like working with him and he's going to have to soften his tone if he wants to stay? How do you do all those things? And we're making progress. And when we've essentially, Barrett, we've eliminated a lot of this baloney that was going on. I call it baloney that was going on where you had a personality conflict more than anything else. So you just ran up to the HR person to you know, bellyache about them. And look, we're adults. We got to, some of this stuff you got to figure out how to work with. Is any of what I'm saying making sense or do you disagree? Give me some color on what I just laid down there.
Yeah, I think that when you have that type of situation where it's us versus them, HR is typically stuck in the middle,
yes,
right? Because we don't win in this scenario.
Right.
And that's where you burn out HR professionals, right? Because I am trying to build a culture, but I have a line out my door, and I'm also getting pinched from the other side of, I have other things to do, right? And
right.
When you start talking
about compliance things that are a lot, right?
Well, and we talk about this too a little bit, and there's two types of HR as well. When we get into it, as you know, you may go from the compliance side and culture. I go transactional and transformative, right? Your transactional HR is much more on the administration side that keeps the bus running, right? It's the fuel in the tank. It's what allows you to drive the bus day to day. And if you did get pulled over, hey, you have everything in order, right? And your transformational HR is, hey, where are we going? What am I plugging into the GPS? And how are we going to get there? And changing how we approach those conversations, and who do we need to train to have these conversations so that we don't have a line out the door of HR, but also that you can approach HR without feeling like it's walking into the Grim Reaper's lair, like I said earlier, or that they don't support me at all either, right? So you have to build a very approachable culture for HR to be able to thrive in. When they're pinned in the middle between two fighting sides, it's a really no-win situation for an HR professional.
You're saying it much more eloquently, and I appreciate the clarity that you've brought, because I agree, because that's what had developed here, and it wasn't healthy. And it seemed in many ways we were getting ourselves involved in discussions that adults needed to have, like, look, okay, you resent Paul because he's above you in the org chart, you know, figure out a way to get along with him better. And there were some team building things that we did. We did a survey, and we tried to find out some of the, you know, where were the issues? There was some struggles with the software that we use, Aspire, and they needed more training. And once they learned how to do some of that, man, it was amazing how much better that got. We put a bonus program in place that made the culture better. So I love what you're saying. I have a talk that I've given, maybe you've seen it before, Barrett, and it's about, you know, keeping the front door open, but the back door closed from an HR perspective. And what we mean by that is, or a human capital management, again, whatever word you want to insert there, there's this beautiful front door to your company. There's music playing. It's very inviting. You walk in it. It smells good. You sense the culture. It's upbeat. It's positive. It's success oriented. I see a career path for myself. And then once you get in there, there's no way out, metaphorically speaking. And so the things that keep them there are the training program, the career path. When you think of that, metaphorically speaking, that our building is our company, and I walk in your front door, is there anything that you have found in your experience that makes somebody want to walk in the front door? And what are a couple things that would make somebody not want to try to find a way out? Like, they're not even going to look for a job. They're just going to stay here. What are some things that make people want to come in and make people want to stay?
Well, I think, you know, we touched on it at the very beginning of, hey, right now, in the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of consolidation in our industry.
Yes.
And there's a lot of landscape companies out there. So what makes your company different, right? And why should people want to work here? I think that as what makes that front door attractive is when you can tell people what that is. If you don't know what makes you different or why people should work there, then you're going to have a really hard time convincing them.
And that is something that everyone listening needs to define. And really, you know, it's funny, Barrett, how many parallels there are between that with the internal employee, okay, the person that works at your company, and the internal customer, and then the external customer. It's the same thing. Like, same thing with your marketing message. So keep going on. So we want to have this inviting workplace. What else makes up an inviting workplace?
Well, it's the same thing with, you know, I think that you hit the word, it's a parallel. Think about your client experience. You know why your product is different, and then you go deliver on that product.
Right.
You got to know why it's different to work here, and then you have to deliver on it, right? People are able to feel when it is genuine and when it's marketing. And if you can't distinguish why it is, you're going to have a hard time proving that you're different.
Right.
And you have to, you know, really deliver on that promise, but also it's about consistency. It's about communication, and it's about really living your core values day in and day out, so people can feel that. And one of the things I've always talked about too is when we talk about employee engagement and surveys and all these type of things, we have to focus on the 80%, right? Too often does the squeaky wheel get the grease, right?
That's so true.
We try to change the culture to save the one employee, but we could really be damaging what makes it great to work here for the other 99, right? So we shouldn't keep the back door locked. I think we need maybe a screen door back there, yeah, right?
There you go. I like that.
We want to be able to show some people the back door when right. needed, but also I call them boomerangs, Marty, right? Sometimes you got to set some people out the back door for them to realize that they can come yeah. back through the front door, and they yeah. can actually bring something better back too, right? Right?
Because maybe they found out or understood some things you were doing that they didn't appreciate. They took it for granted. Is that what you mean?
Not only that, but
maybe they grow up.
Yeah. But yeah. in a lot of different ways, right? There's been times where I've had employees who are ready and able to be a project manager, but we don't have that availability for
them.
I'm not going to stunt your career, because that's where resentment grows.
Boy, is that a good point.
Next year, it's yeah. coming. Don't worry.
Right.
Versus, hey, you know what? I don't think we have this opportunity here.
Right.
But you go get this experience, and when the opportunity comes back, we'll give you a call. You're the right. first on the list. And you're going to bring a lot more value back, because you've learned from other people. You've seen it done a different way. It's not necessarily that you're sending in a mole for them to figure it out. You're giving them the experience, and you're giving them the freedom to say, this is how we treat our people. We know that this is what you want, and we're able to accept that we can't give it to you right now, but we hope that you see that this isn't how every company acts.
Yeah.
And that when you do come back, you come back better than you found it.
That is great experience, Cher. I love listening to that. I just came from our weekly leadership team meeting, and we had someone presented to us for a management position from outside the organization, and we were discussing her, and we're probably at this point not going to make an offer to her, not because we don't like her, but because for the position she's being considered for, we have at least 4 internal candidates that have been in our training, and we think that it's better to promote from within. Our mission statement at Grunder Landscaping Company, Barrett, is to create opportunities for our team to grow and succeed by enhancing the beauty and value of every client's property while exceeding their expectations every step of the way. We have something like 13 people now in the last 4 years in our growth that have been promoted from entry level to management or different positions. And it is part of our culture now. And it's one thing to say in your mission statement that you're going to do something, or like you said, you know, look, it's coming next year, just one more year. I know you can do it, and stringing them along. I think it's someone with a really good clarity of purpose that you just described there. Like, look, I gotta do what's right for this person, and they shouldn't be held back. I don't have a position for you. You're great. You're not doing anything wrong. Go take the position and let's keep in touch. And maybe something else is here for you in the future. Can we talk about that? I think that's what I'm hearing you say. And I'm just curious what you think of what I mentioned there about internal versus external, you know, hires and things like that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
100%. Well, Marty, I think that what you just talked about is that's how you keep employees and team members from looking for a back door.
I see.
Right?
Yep. Think about it that way. You're right.
Is because what got them in the front door was, hey, we have a training program, and if you go through this program, you're going to get the opportunity.
Right.
If you hire in somebody above it, especially with 4 people, that all that tells me is that training program, 1, doesn't work. And 2, that if I go through it, I'm not going to be considered. They're just going to hide. It's another way for them to handcuff me to the desk and keep me here. Right. Yeah. And where is that back door? Right.
Right.
Whereas, hey, we went through this process and I think this would be valuable for people to know as well is, hey, we looked outside, but we also believe that what we've done here and set you guys up will be successful and we're betting on you. And that goes back to our promise and now we're delivering on it. So, you know, I think that when we talk about internal hiring, I think that the opportunities need to be presented. There's a time and there's a place. And if you are not able to promote from within and there are people who are in consideration, they need to understand the why. Right. Because when you start to level up a company, you know, there are certain areas where we actually need a different perspective in order to grow. And you've been trained in our lens and our views. And we need somebody who has proven experience in managing $50 million versus five, right? Yep. It's a big gap. That gap is not something where I want you to learn on the job. That's a gap that I want you to be mentored for, right? That's why this person is coming in, so that you can get better.
Wonderful. Well, Barrett, you're going to be teaching at Grow in Dallas, Texas at Gene and Chris's Complete Land Sculpture, February 10th, 11th, and 12th. Details are always with our emails. Tell us a little bit about some of what you're going to be teaching. I have some other questions to ask you, but tell us a little bit about what's in store for when you teach at Grow.
Well, I'm super excited for the topics this year. It's funny, our conversation today kind of naturally went there, but one of the topics I'm going to be presenting on this year is three conversations every leader should master. And we're going to be talking about the importance of interviewing, right? Okay. But not just hiring interviews. We're going to talk about stay and exit interviews that really create the ultimate feedback loop for teams.
Can you give us a little bit of insight on a hiring interview, a stay interview, an exit interview, that internal employment brand? That give us a little bit of taste of that.
Yeah, because it does bleed into the second topic, which is creating and nurturing your employment brand, which really goes to everything we just talked about of, hey, your employment brand isn't what you say about your company. It's about what your team members and candidates and people who interact with your company about working there, right?
I'm learning. I got it. That's a great point. Never thought about that either.
And so for me, when we talk about hiring interviews, we have to make sure that we are matching the interview to the position and that we're asking the right questions in the right interviews. And that goes back to the small things for HR leaders, right? Level of positions and how to suss out what is good experience versus bad experience they're going to need help with. But stay interviews. Why are you not looking for a back door? What makes it so great for you to work here? Because I have to understand why you like it so much so I can help create that. Exit interviews. Hey, on the way out, why did you like here? What were the challenges, right? So we can learn about what we maybe fell short on or where we are falling short as a company. Are there blind spots or is it intentionally being put on the back burner that it's time to pull it off, right? Because it's costing us. And so I think that having a little bit of insight to that feedback loop is something that we only focus on the front side of interviewing it and getting people in the door.
Yeah.
But we don't know, to your point and your philosophy is we don't know why people aren't looking for the back door.
Right.
Or if they do start looking, how can we change their perspective?
All of this, Barrett, that you're talking, it's about having someone that's focused on this in your company. The smaller your company, there's going to have to be some shared duties. That's just where it is. Yep. You know, our talent and acquisition manager, Rachel's got a lot of things on her plate. We are a little bit bigger now. So it's, you know, if she would have been here 5 years ago, she would have had 20 things on her plate. Now she probably has seven. So it's a little bit better. But, you know, having a dialogue going on with the team, like, why did they leave? Is there a manager that's maybe the exit interview points to needing help? I know the stay interviews. You know, one of the questions that I love to ask is, hey, listen, what kind of opportunity, if presented to you, would make you want to leave Grunder Landscaping? It's nice to hear that. Now, you may not like what it is, but the more you talk about that, Barrett, and I think the more you're engaged with your team, number one, the team's going to feel like you care about them. And I think anybody, I can't see anybody wanting to say, well, I like my job, but they don't care about me. I can't see that. That just doesn't seem like that would match up. Like caring about have an employer that cares about you would be a big part about why you like the job. Like if I just go in here and it's not safe, or there's, you know, language I don't appreciate, or yelling or screaming, whatever it is, you know, I think caring has to be a big part of that. I think we're talking about having a good relationship with the team.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're talking about a little bit there is and I actually brought an employment engagement guy on to talk about this explicitly in the Roots of Success podcast for McFarland Sanford is, you know, engagement is what you do in your job.
I see.
Culture is how you get it done.
Yep.
Right.
Right.
So as somebody who may, this is the only design build firm in town, and I'm a designer. I love what I do, but I hate who I do it for. Right.
I see.
So
I see.
The next opportunity that comes around, I'm looking for it. Right.
Yep.
But that's part of where those stay interviews really come into play for an HR professional as well, is it gives me a pulse on where my team is at.
Yeah.
Hey, John's a great interview, is a great designer, but I can tell you he's not happy with us as a company and everything that we've put him through. The next time somebody gives him a call, he's gone.
Yeah. But
if we know that, one, we can try to make it better for John and maybe make that save, turning him into a raving fan, or, hey, we got to start backfilling. We got to start that process now, because it's not going to be long before he's not here, rather than getting caught by surprise and going, oh my gosh, I had no idea John was unhappy.
Yeah, which that can happen, especially when you get big or you've been focused on a particular thing as the owner, like maybe it's sales or maybe there's a big job and you, I don't know, Barrett, I don't know if this happens to you. Do you ever like go into work one day and something now is incredibly clear to you and you can't believe you missed it?
Oh, especially with people.
And that's why, right. And that's why I think little disruptions like these stay interviews, exit interview, talking, you know, going to lunch with your, whoever's doing your human resource work in your company, or just not like going through the motions, like getting engaged in the business and doing a survey, trying to find out what's going on, like being aware and being engaged. But I know from time to time it gets difficult. My mother got diagnosed with a brain tumor in October of 18. They said that she would probably make it a year. She lasted 100 days. And I was a mess, Barrett. I wasn't myself. Truth be known, I was probably battling depression during this. And I wasn't doing well at all. And thank God for my team. Like they picked things up. I don't know how many problems they handled without even getting it to me. And I kind of woke up maybe 5 or 6 months after my mom passed away. And I just kind of like, wow, welcome back. Like I had a major thing going on in my life and I just wasn't myself. I mean, stuff like that happens. And I think that's why it's so important to, you know, do lunches with your management team, to, you know, hear about the stay interviews, to hear about that. And if it was a good stay interview, to follow up with that team member to say, hey, I understand you talked to Barrett and things are going well for you. I just want to tell you, thank you. I'm proud to have you here at our company. I look forward to growing with you. I just think there's so much that goes on there, benefit from talking and doing these things that we're discussing today.
Yeah. Well, I think that goes to like, and this is maybe one of the bigger things you can do for your HR team, but as you grow, it's, they need a seat at the table, right? They need to be involved,
right?
Because when they understand the long-term vision of the company, they are able to build and craft and guide the people with it.
That is so smart. Yes.
And if I don't understand the finances, you got to teach me so that I'm not out here spending money for no reason, right? And maybe I'm not giving people 18 uniforms, I'm giving them 5, right? And we're working our way in, or we're finding creative solutions versus just throwing money or bodies at the problem.
So you have an opportunity to engage with 10 to 12 landscapers several times a month in your peer groups. You're doing your accountability calls. We're going to Ace Connect shortly in Utah, Salt Lake City, the Montage. We're going to have a great time there. You're going to be teaching at Grow in February. What are you seeing? Do you have any predictions for 2026? Maybe they're business predictions. What do you see in store for those who want to win the HR game in 26? Let's tie a bow on this with some gold from Barrett Chow, please.
Well, I would tell HR professionals and business owners to hold on to your hats, right? I think that based on, you know, shaking my eight ball from when I was in fifth grade, right? It's going to be a wild one. I think we're going to see a lot of cost increases, especially within employee benefits and corporate insurance. These rising costs, which we're seeing across a lot of areas right now, they're going to continue to put a pinch on middle managers, in HR departments to do more with less.
Okay.
And the cost savings, the pinching, all of that is, we're already seeing it, is going to cause the talent pool to hesitate to make changes, right? It's not 2020 anymore where people are jumping left and right. We're seeing a change in the economy. We're seeing a change in the overall culture and the outlook of the country. So people they're not making changes as willy-nilly or without thinking it through, or, hey, benefit costs are a big deal to families. It's going to be harder to convince somebody to come to your company if that's not something you offer.
Yep.
Right. So it's going to put a big strain on there. And I think the next side of this is, how do we handle the integration of AI? AI is out there. It's no secret. It's and HR is going to be tasked with a very big problem, or to solve big opportunity, as we would say, right? To how do we integrate this in to help us automate and improve our routine tasks that can allow us to be more efficient? But also, how are we going to protect our company, right? Yep. That's the other side of this, is that HR, I always say, is the shield that protects the company.
Shield that protects the company. Great point.
And, you know, usually the other person holding that shield with them is legal, right? And those are not usually the two departments people want to see, but those are the battles that they fight. And it's a thankless job. So, you know, I'm encouraging owners all the time, make sure that you are showing your appreciation. You're saying thank you to your HR professionals day in and day out, because we have a lot of conversations that will never reach your desk that you're not equipped to handle.
Yeah, and I get it.
And I would also say that the emotional weight that some of these conversations carry, they come home with us, and it's hard for us. So I think we're only going to see more of those conversations, and it's going to be a wild 2026 based on the way 2025 is ending.
Right.
But there's a lot of good things coming out. And I think that where we see the HR landscape shifting is how do we continue to focus on what matters most? And that's the people.
I can't think of a better way to close, Barrett. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you at Grow. If folks want to reach out to you, they can find you on LinkedIn. I know that. And I look forward to seeing you facilitating a group soon. It's been great to have you on today, and you're definitely coming back.
Oh, can't wait, Marty. Great to see you, and we'll see you soon.
All right. That was Barrett Chow with McFarland Stanford, folks. Okay, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show, powered by Steel. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show. And if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, take out your phone right now and share this episode with your team or any landscape pro you know. Thanks for joining us this week on The Grow Show. We'll talk to you next week.
Join Marty Grunder and the Grow Group team for the annual event for landscape pros. Grow 2026 will be held on February 10th through 12th, 2026 in Dallas, Texas, and feature a behind-the-scenes tour of complete land sculpture, alongside breakout sessions diving deeper into the topics we cover each week on The Grow Show. Early bird pricing ends on November 1. Register this month to lock in the best rate.